And finally, the universal apostolate. Not unlike St. Ignatius, centuries later, for Francis, the whole world needed to be evangelized. Francis, as we know, did the unheard of thing of going to the Muslim Sultan, presenting himself in person. He could have been, well, hacked down in the presence of the Sultan. And to this day, the Franciscan order has custody of the Holy Land. And to this day, the Franciscans are the ones who have the faculty given them by the Pope to bless the way of the cross. There is an association in the Church's history between the Franciscans and both the Holy Land and Christ's Passion. One of the great desires of Francis was for martyrdom. Poor man, he died a natural death, deeply disappointed. I'm sure you know the story of Cinati of Padua, who was a monk, not a Franciscan. But he heard about Franciscans getting martyred as Anthony. He figured, I better join them, and I'll become a martyr. Again, poor Anthony. He was a Franciscan, but he too died a natural death. I think I've told you, being brought up in the spirit of St. Francis, from my first Mass, which I celebrated on June the 21st, 1947. Ever since, every Mass, I pray for the gift of martyrdom. I'm still waiting. Preaching. And this is, as we said during the homily, we are all called upon to proclaim Christ's word to others and convert people. Did I get an agreement for you people to be at least one convert in a year? In the next year? Did I do that?
Yeah.
What was the date? Now look, just to make sure, somebody could write it down so we don't forget. Today is the 17th of April. Am I correct? Is it? Okay. 1994, right? So by September, by April the 17th, 1995, the Lord spares me. I'm here. We'll have class. I'm going to get from all of you a report. And of course, don't be satisfied with one convert or more, but at least one. I want every able-bodied person attending these classes to bring at least one person either back to the church or to the Catholic faith by April the 17th, 1995. Is that a deal? See, we have no choice. There is work to be done, and that to the whole world. What I'd like to do now, it's 3:36, and I think usual procedure is at 3:40 or 3:45 that we start answering questions. Well, let me make a very important announcement. As I mentioned earlier, I spoke to Cardinal Sanchez, my Vatican superior, this morning by telephone. He was in the United States during Easter week for less than 2 days. He spoke on the Catechism of the Catholic Church. He has given us 2 assignments, and I assured him in my phone conversation today that we would carry through. One are the 2 assignments, and they're not just a one-job deal. They are 2 publications. One, for the formation of priests. Holy Father is deeply concerned over the need that priests have for ongoing spiritual and doctrinal formation. By November of this year, we promised the Congregation for the Clergy we would have the first issue of this publication in print. Next week I plan to give you more data. Second publication is to be called The Catholic Catechist. And behind the Catholic Catechist as a publication, and this is to be monthly, and to start publication as soon as we can, hopefully this summer. Behind the publication, we plan on an association which the Holy See is involved in. I want to make absolutely, absolutely sure. That's why I called Cardinal Sanchez up this morning, so I could then share this with you. Yes, he does want an association of Catholic catechists, or Catholic Catechist Association, whose organ of publication then would be this publication called The Catholic Catechist. We are soliciting funds. This will cost money. Within a week, my hope is to provide you at least with a basic outline of both forthcoming publications. And of course, I would like to have all of you somehow involved, and others you can subordinate into service to cooperate. The Holy See, I have said it more than once, is desperately poor. The budget of the American bishops is higher than that of the Pope for the whole Church. The faith must be preserved. And the Holy Father has no illusions. Even as so many of the mistaken and bad ideas emanating from America. So correspondingly, the Holy Father and those who work with him depend on the United States to help the rest of the world. Here, I repeat, are the 2 gravest needs which the Catholic Church has to strengthen the spiritual and doctrinal formation of her priests and to motivate the Catholics, especially the laity, in not just, say, receiving the forthcoming catechism, but to become catalysts for catechizing in a way that by ourselves we'd never dream of doing, that I wouldn't dream of doing. I don't have the authority, but Rome does. You'll be provided with further information already by next Sunday. And now, some of your questions. Given the number of questions, I'll have to make the answers rather short. Is there a good reason why churches are removing the tabernacle from in front of the church to a side or back of the church? There is no good reason. St. John's image of the woman and her offspring pursued by the dragon and fleeing into the desert as usually applied to the end times. I've heard Scott Hahn, though not denying its application to the end of times, sees this as a story told to St. John by Our Lady of the flight of the Holy Family into the desert to Egypt to escape Herod the Edomite. He says, Edom means red. Herod is the first red dragon. What do you think? Oh, you can say that, but you don't stop. You don't stop with Herod and Christ's flight into Egypt. Oh, no. It's going on right now. How do I explain why it is necessary to go to a priest to confession? I spoke with a convert, and this was something she didn't quite accept. Well, the poor dear, work on her so she will accept it. Because being a Catholic means you believe on faith, that Christ gave the apostles the power to forgive sins and forgive sins after they are manifested. A regular confession. That means earful confessions. A regular. That a regular confession of sins is a divine mandate. Why is it necessary? Because Christ said so. Period. Three of us are secular Franciscans. Our fraternity is, by God's grace, completely Orthodox, notwithstanding the friars we have had as advisors. You'll be starting a new formation class next month. Would you like us to give a name and number? Would you like us to give a name and a number? Oh, yes, by all means. With altar girls, or will altar girls be allowed to serve the Latin Tridentine Rite Mass? An interesting question. That would surely be a really... Please explain in layman's terms where the fundamental option is, I could not understand what the Holy Father was driving at. I would not use the verb driving at. What the Holy Father is saying is, there is a very basic error regarding sin called the fundamental option, which claims that every human being, at least once in his or her life, is faced with a fundamental option to either accept or reject God. But then they go further and they claim that fundamental option is the only mortal sin you can commit. No single sin is ever mortal. No adultery is ever mortal. No single abortion is ever a mortal sin. What constitutes a mortal sin, and therefore should be confessed, is the habit of what we call mortal sins, where a person has rejected God. On those premises, almost no one, except of course the devil, would be committing mortal sins. The main single reason for so many empty confessions or confessionals in the Western world. And the genius behind that error is the Jesuit Karl Rahner. You're redeemed by Christ's sacrifice, that is grace. A preternatural gift becomes available to us. We see Our Lady was saved in anticipation of Christ's merits at the first instant of her life. Must we not say that all the grace given to our first parents, not only after the fall, but even at the first instant of their lives, was given also in anticipation of Christ's sacrifice? You can say that, but that's not the way the Church teaches. In other words, it is so the Church teaches. It is only because the human race fell that then incarnation took place, and therefore the grace given since the fall is the grace either in anticipation or subsequent to the incarnation. So, we do not, strictly speaking, speak of the grace to our first parents being in anticipation of Christ's sacrifice. What book, besides the Bible, is a good or best source of theological knowledge of God? Really, the Church's teachings, our official teaching about God Himself, is it Vatican I? How rare can I get it? Priests almost never teach about God Himself. Well, I would say Ludwig Ott, O-double-T. Ludwig Ott. Translation of the German. Given titles. Fundamentals of Dogma is one title I'm familiar with. So Ludwig Ott, O-double-T, is a synthesis of the Church's teaching over the centuries, organized in the form of theses, a very compact book, but extremely useful. Where the Church's official teachings about God, it is found in many places, but especially in Vatican I. The divine attributes are spelled out in detail in the decisions and defined doctrines of the First Vatican Council and the text of the First Vatican Council can be found, the 10 publishers, has a book called The Teachings of the Church, which include all the decisions and decrees of the First Vatican Council. They are located near many Catholic churches that are convenient for us to attend, but every Mass is loaded with abuses. Should we go out of our way, 100 miles round trip, at an inconvenient time, 5 a.m., to attend the Tridentine Mass, which is approved by the bishop, or is it acceptable to keep going to our local church? Well, I would say this depends on you. You certainly are free to go even 50 miles each way. On the other hand, you surely may also attend even these abused masses. But watch it. Be careful that our view understandable, shall I call it charity or sympathy, you do not imbibe some of the ideas. We are living in a revolutionary world. Dioceses have been hit by a theological hurricane. In Chicago, for example, they are now going to turn over parishes to women, to be run by women. Just heard today, and one, a nun who did not wear any garb, now is going around dolled up in a clerical collar. The recently appointed pastor, Lord help us. Things are very serious. The revolution will pass. This cannot go on. Catholic Church cannot survive on these conditions, but somebody had better keep the faith intact. Is it an obligation to avoid abusive masses, or is it more important to go to any Mass on a daily basis? Well, I would say to go to any Mass on a daily basis. But be prudent, be careful, and do not unnecessarily expose yourselves to ideas that some of these abusive masses will practice. If you have the choice, which Mass would you prefer to celebrate? 1, Novus Ordo in English. 2, Novus Ordo Latin. 3, the old Latin Tridentine. Thank you. Well, I like to celebrate all three. What I do back home, as a matter of policy, is regularly celebrate the Novus Ordo in English. But I'm very happy saying the Novus Ordo in Latin, and I deliberately, though I could, I abstain from offering Mass in the Tridentine Latin, though I deeply, highly appreciate and approve. Why do I do that? To maintain my freedom, that I will have the leverage, and no one can tell me that I am, say, following the Tridentine ritual out of emotion. No. I I may have told you that we are planning, a priest friend of mine, we are planning to start a movement among priests who will have both Latin Masses as part of their practice, the Novus Ordo Mass and the Tridentine Mass, and priests who are strongly in favor of the Latin be authorized to say both Masses. And we so far have about 80 priests committed to that practice, and we further have a bishop backing the venture. Can a priest improvise his way of baptizing? Question. Can a priest improvise his own way of baptizing? I heard about one who baptizes in the name of the Creator, the Redeemer, and the Sanctifier. Was the infant validly baptized? Answer. There might be some question whether it was licit, but as long as the intention is to do what the Church intends, it's valid. Sorry, dear Father, you are wrong. He continues, the old traditional formula, in the name of the Father, and so on, is not difficult to learn and should be used. It's much better, of course, when the baptism is both valid and licit, as the liturgy and the parents expect. Spontaneous improvisations are a sign of talent among musicians and Dixieland jazz bands, but it signifies nothing in the conferral of sacraments. Not so fast, Father. Not so fast. It may possibly be a valid baptism. I don't think so. And this is a problem that we're facing. Improvisations, my eye. All kinds of introductions, words removed, words added, which have had not merely the laceity, but the validity. We videotape our Tuesday evening daily Mass for rebroadcast the next weekend on local cable TV and even CTND. The Tuesday Mass is the next Sunday liturgy. My question is, do people who view and partake in our Mass broadcast receive the same graces, except for receiving communion, as they would if they went to the Mass at church? No. Lowercase, no. You mentioned that not all annulments are right. What criteria does one use to know whether an annulment is right or is suspect, especially if you are granted one? Well, this has been my policy over the years. I tell people who have had an annulment granted by the Church to trust God that their annulment is valid. trust God, it is valid. Having said that, are there norms for determining whether a given annulment is valid or not? There sure are. What are those norms? The three basic norms that we've gone over more than once for there being a sacramental, indissoluble marriage. Condition number one, both validly baptized before marriage. Secondly, both enter into a valid contract, which means they want to remain faithful to one another for life. They intend a lifetime commitment, and they want to accept the children that God will send them. And then thirdly, how the marriage is naturally consummated. Even one natural act of intercourse after marriage. Now, most of the annulments that are granted are on condition number two. Are the people either do not believe or don't realize that marriage is a lifetime commitment. Remember, what happens after the marriage has nothing to do with affecting the validity. Once married, you're married, period. What are called annulments is really a misnomer. De facto, what they should be called is declarations of nullity, that there had not been a sacramental, consummated, and valid contractual marriage in the first place. In an unstable country like ours, there are so many people, they marry all right with that verb in quotation marks. They have no sincere idea of remaining faithful to one another for life. And that is why, as I've said how many times, the Catholic Church will survive in only those dioceses in which the bishop and the people in that diocese still believe that Christ's teaching on sacramental, valid, consummated marriage stands. The main reason, as I've said so often, not just here, but by now 1,000 times in lectures and classes over the years, the main single reason for the breakdown of the Catholic Church in one country after another is right here. And unless we in America wake up to the crisis which we are facing, then what I'm saying is no prophecy, just common sense. The days of American Catholicism are numbered unless and where and when and insofar as there are those who are in charge of the Church who still believe that, under the conditions described, sacramental marriage cannot be dissolved by any human power. Good and unknown, but pre-existing psychiatric diagnosis invalidate a marriage. Well, no, just because there was a diagnosis, that would not invalidate a marriage. I've counseled enough psychiatrists to help them understand the realities of life. If there is one fallible profession in this world, it is the profession of psychiatry. Is it, however, possible that there is a diagnosis which, given the testing given, that the validity of the marriage is called into question because of the psychotic condition which the person had shown? But the diagnosis has nothing to do with the validity of the marriage. Why can't the prominent deacons be pastors instead of women? You ask. You ask the deacons. Guess who is running the church? Although I must say this, I received enough invitations to the ordination of deacons to be able to say this. And every invitation I've ever received, the left side of the invitation had a list of the wives of the deacons. Right side were the deacons themselves to be ordained. In other words, the deacon is married, knowing human nature. The deacon's wife is not above exercising her influence on her dear husband, the Reverend Deacon. Is it true? Man has an immortal soul, and animals have a mortal soul, which dies when they die. But man's immortal soul, of course, lives on. That's right. In other words, our soul is immortal while having certain qualities, animal properties, which we would say are mortal. Yes. A Catholic at work has related the following to me. While traveling, he went to confession in London, England. At a travel station of a Catholic church, he received the following absolution: I absolve you of all your sins, past, present, and future sins. I explained to him that this seemed to exceed the authority of the priest in confession, as each major sin needs to be confessed. The future sins cannot be said yet. What should I have said? Well, what you told the priest was good. He needs instruction. But I would say, don't raise a red flag, especially before a stranger, and most especially in England. So, I think you spoke well. I hope the priest learned from your exhortation. At this point, would it do any good to object to altar girls? Would it have any effect? Oh, yes. Respecting the Pope's authority, nevertheless, pointing out simply but firmly what consequence you foresee as a result of altar girls. Mother Teresa spoke to the Holy Father. She told him, she told me, she told him, and the consequences would be devastating. Did your mother express surprise that you did not become a Franciscan? Oh, yes. Not only surprise, but an objection. The best I could tell her, Mother, I did the next best thing. I'm not sure I convinced her. I was told by someone that their parish priest read from the document of the Vatican II on the renovation of churches. Is this information in the documents? It depends on what is meant by renovation of churches. I would say it would not be the documents of Vatican II as such, but there are several thousand supporting documents besides those of Vatican II issued by the Holy See, among which would be some touching on churches. In saying Mass, is it necessary for the priest to put water in the wine and also to wash his hands? This priest never washes his hands at Mass. He may already put the water in the cup before Mass. Well, he should do both. Both pour the water into the wine during Mass and wash his hands. Can you recommend a missal? Well, there are missals on the market. All the existing missals for the Novus Ordo, as you know, the translation has been approved by the ICEL, which leaves much to be desired. Why does not the church hierarchy in Rome discipline bishops, priests, who stray from the true dogma? Our Catholic faith keeps getting watered down. By backing down, it weakens church faithful, priesthood, and leaves them in confusion. Remember, see, the document that we're reading and going over is one way in which the Pope is trying to cope with the situation. Each pope thinks differently. There are bishops are removed. Bishops are reprimanded. And over the years, I've had the dubious privilege of reprimanding bishops. So I know it's done. The problem is not just reprimanding a bishop, but what he does after being duly reprimanded. Why did not Jesus become incarnate 2,000 years sooner? It would have avoided much killing, bloodshed between the different groups of people. At this time, why did God approve of such brutality in this area? Oh no, he didn't approve it. Why did he wait this long? Till we get to heaven, we won't really know the answer. The bottom line is, why does God permit evil? Why does he allow sin? That needless to say, is a mystery. But one reason we can say is that the more evil and the more sin, the more grace God will give. Where sin abounds, their grace will even more abound. What pope tried the experiment of having First Communion before First Confession? How long before he changed it back? No pope tried the experiment of First Communion before His Confession. Zero. And when Paul VI, in many parts of the world, they took upon themselves the liberty of giving communion before confession, but never with Rome's backing. If teenagers don't want to go to daily mass, is it all right if a parent gently but firmly takes them anyway, winter and summer? All I know, being brought up by a loving mother less than 5 foot tall, gently but firmly, we've got to start early. Real early. Real, real early. So many modern parents